You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is the foul-mouthed and salacious Charlene Schmidt.
Thank you for that introduction. That was beautiful. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm in a good mood today. We have, I think, in store a fantastic episode to talk about. We've got a wealth of information on this subject, casting Voyager.
I've been thinking about this all week, and I'm so glad that we're tackling this topic. And through my research, and I feel like you encountered this problem as well, is that when you try to figure out, well, let me phrase it this way. When the TNG Blu-rays came out, we heard a lot more background information about who was cast, who did screen tests, who didn't, you know, who was going to be Geordi, like, you know, Wesley Snipes, and, you know, like, who was going to be Riker, and the outrageous Okono was going to be Riker at one time,
or they
at least auditioned, you know, like, all these cool alternate universe type stuff. And we started, Char and I, you and I, did research on who auditioned for Voyager and who was a pick, and we mainly only got Janeway stuff back.
Yes, very publicized Janeway stuff, and not just Genevieve Bujold, although we will cover that. We have a lot more, though, and honestly, we're not going to get through everybody in this one show, so we are definitely going to revisit this topic. We're probably going to cover Janeway, and maybe cover a little more ground on other cast members, but to be honest, we have a long way to go.
This is going to be a Janeway heavy show. And like Char said, we're not going to be able to cover everybody. And the thing is, there is so much knowledge out there that's untapped. It's not necessarily online, or it could be in people's heads. It could be things that you could have heard, or even insider information. So please go to trek.fm/forums and let us know who we missed. And if you know of any stories, there's so many people out there who have connections in the industry. We have to be missing something.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you've got info, let us know.
All right. Well, let's kick it off with the obvious person that we're going to talk about. And I can barely pronounce her name. Genevieve Bujold. Is that right?
No. Incorrect. You have to give it the French enunciation, my friend.
Okay. So let me try it again. Genevieve Bujold. Is that right?
Nice try. Okay. I'll say it. Genevieve Bujold. It's the only thing I can say in French.
I'm pretty sure that's what I said.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how I pronounced it.
You crack me up, man. You're normally really good with impressions, but no. Not this time.
French is not one of them. Okay, so we all know who she is. What happened was maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe we all don't know who she is. What happened was she was cast as Janeway. She had the uniform. Was passed the screen test. Paramount liked her, and most of the production crew liked her on Voyager, and they're like, yeah, let's do this. They hired her. She signed a contract, all that kind of business. And she filmed for 1.5 days.
She realized pretty much right off the bat it was not for her. She is a very well-known French-Canadian movie actress, so she's used to shooting movies, and TV is a completely different game. In terms of shooting schedules, it's much more hectic and fast-paced. She was used to shooting about, you know, like 2 pages a day for a movie.
Yeah,
when
maximum.
You're doing a TV show, it's way more than that. And so with that kind of a pace and the really long days that Star Trek is known for, she said, I can't do this. I'm really sorry. I have a family. I'm just overwhelmed.
It's funny. The story differs depending on who you talk to. Bujold says that she's like, yeah, no, like I just couldn't handle it. I have a family, too much time, and so I just decided to leave. Berman, Rick Berman, tells it a little bit differently.
Ooh, what did he say? I don't know this.
Oh, yeah, no. He admitted, and this was much late. This was about 9 years ago, I think, something like I think 8 years ago in an interview. He talked about, and he said, he's like, yeah, this woman was not ready for TV. It was too fast-paced. It's exactly what you said, you know, and it's exactly what Bujold talked about. It's too fast-paced. It's too much of a time commitment. She has a family, blah, blah, blah. But he did it in a little bit more biting way. He's like, she cannot remember 7 pages of dialogue every single day. And she didn't like working with a different director that she didn't know each time. She didn't like having makeup people come and touch up her makeup or touch up her hair or anything like that. She just wanted to leave it alone. And then I think by the second day, she was in tears in her trailer. And Berman kept saying, like, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. And Jerry Taylor and Michael Piller were like, no, no, it's going to work. It's going to be great. But like when she ran to her trailer in tears on the second day of her job, Berman won. And then Piller and Berman went to her trailer and said, okay, please go home.
You out now!
Okay, I did not know that they did that, that went down. Now, I did know that Berman had a lot of reservations about Bujold because she was not his choice. She was more of the suit's choice because she was much more well-known than some of the other people that we're going to name later on. And so they wanted the star power, essentially.
Yes. She had a lot of heat because she was Academy nominated and she won a Golden Globe.
Right. So they thought, on paper, this is our girl. But clearly not. And if you've ever gone on YouTube, you look at the footage that they have now released of Bujold on her 1.5 days on set for the scenes that she did film. And I am really glad that she bowed out.
Yes.
That's all I've got to say about that.
It would have been a very, very different show. And also a correction to what I just said earlier. It was not Michael Piller and Rick Berman who went to her trailer and asked her to leave. It was Winrick Colby, the director of the episode, and Berman who did it.
Okay.
But yeah, like if you look at these clips of her, she's very wooden, very uncomfortable, just not Star Trek at all.
The Cardassians claim they forced the Maquis ship into a plasma storm where it was destroyed. But our probes haven't picked up any debris.
You can tell that she just doesn't have any understanding of the character, what is going on, and very wooden. There's just nothing at all going on. There's nothing, there's just no passion in her performance whatsoever. And if you watch Kate Mulgrew's scenes right after it, you're just, whoa, yeah, we got the right captain.
Yeah, you have this huge sigh of relief. You're like, oh,
you do.
God.
Your heart warms over and you say, thank you, Miss Mulgrew, for being there.
And Bujold's Janeway was called Nicole Janeway.
Yes. Yes. And Janeway had several names, at least in draft mode. It was Nicole. Then for a little while, it was Elizabeth Janeway. And then, of course, when Kate Mulgrew came on board, she decided, no, I want it to be Catherine Janeway. And everybody went along with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So she's like, just use my name. It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they did that because it's just little things like that where if you look at Kate Mulgrew, you're like, you don't look like a Nicole.
No. Elizabeth, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I could see that. I could see
or
that.
Or Samantha, maybe. But Catherine, yeah, I don't know. I have an Aunt Catherine, or great Aunt Catherine, I believe, who apparently was very bossy to my mother, and my mom has never therefore loved the name Catherine because she associates it with bossiness. And I think, bossy, captain, yes. That works.
That's really funny.
Okay. So now we've gotten Genevieve Bujold out of the way. Everybody knows that story now.
Everyone knows that story now, and if you didn't, you know it now, and you can log it away as a trivia fact that you can impress people at the bars. So, Karen Austin is the next person on our list, and you may recognize that name, and if you don't recognize that name, you will definitely recognize the voice, because she has been on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and she has been on Voyager. She is better known as Maral, B'Elanna's mother.
Yes. Yes.
And I think this would have been an interesting choice. I'm not saying it would have been the right one.
Yeah.
But I do like that actress. What do you think about that actress?
I like her as an actress. And I thought she was fantastic as Maral.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time really wondering, like, okay, would she have made a good Janeway or not? I'm kind of torn. I'm not entirely sure, and I can't even pinpoint why. Maybe it's because I've not seen her in a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I just don't know about this one.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that I have only seen her in two episodes. You know, I've only seen her in North Battle to the Strong in Deep Space Nine, and I've only seen her in Barge of the Dead. And she did a great job in both, and I think she has a really nice presence. She has piercing eyes. Piercing eyes.
She does.
And she has a genuine mystique about her that is almost tangible and on screen. And it's, but the thing is, though, can she be the captain of a starship? Can she bring us back week after week? And right. I feel like that's why she was brought in, is because she's a fantastic actress. She looks great. She has the chops, but she just didn't have that little ineffable quality.
Yeah. I think we've got to leave that one there, just because I really don't know much else about her. If we're totally wrong, people, let us know. Write in. Tell us where you've seen her perform and if she had the chops or not. I just have a hard time imagining it.
But one person that I think might be a little bit easier to imagine is the next person on the list, and that's Joanna Cassidy.
Which I think is totally awesome, because she went on to play T'Pol's mother in Enterprise. Yes. So, again, this is a face we've seen on Star Trek now. What do you think about this?
I think she's great. I think she is the right age. I think she's the right age for a captain. And normally, you know, you hate to judge people this way, but when you're talking about an actor or actress, you kind of have to. You have to worry about the look. And she has that she has a great mixture of beauty and age that is perfect for a captain who is someone who you could believe rose high enough in her career to actually maintain this role. And she's very beautiful, but the thing is, she's not a babe, you know, like she's not.
It's true. Yeah. Okay. When you put it that way, you've really made a convincing case. I was kind of leaning a little more on the side of, well, maybe she's a little too old, or maybe she would come off almost as motherly because of her age. But you know what? Yeah, she does have just enough going that would, prove her authority, that she's convincing in that, you know, her career is, she's got credibility. But then, it's not like she's an unattractive lady.
No, not at all.
Yeah, she's a very beautiful lady. No, she is not the youngest of the performers we're talking about today, but certainly she's holding her own there.
I feel like Bejold might be the oldest, but Joanna Cassidy's not far behind, because Bejold was born in 45, and that would make her 68. And she looks fantastic for her age, and she would have looked. I hate talking about it that way, but she fits the mold. She fits the mold, and I think this would have been a good show, but Kate Mulgrew is still the right choice.
Absolutely agreed. Okay,
I think that's where we have to leave that.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another interesting name: Lindsay Krause. Now, do you know this name from anywhere? Where do you know her?
I know her from Buffy. She was on the show Buffy a lot, and I'm trying to remember. And she was also in the movie Mr. Brooks, which I like a lot. I really like. Not a lot of people like that movie, but I liked it. She played Professor Maggie Walsh on Buffy. She kind of ran this initiative where she had all these military soldiers who tried to destroy all the vampires and use science and guns to get rid of demons, and Buffy used magic. And I've never liked Lindsay Krause.
Never, huh?
Never. I've never liked her. I have nothing against her as an individual. She's just never connected with me whatsoever on an entertainment level. It's just everything that she says out of her mouth, I don't believe her.
Whew. Okay, those are big words, because you have got to be believable if you're going to be a captain giving orders. If you think that what the captain is saying is complete BS, Warp 5, are you sure? You know, she can't have that on the bridge.
Well, see, that's the thing, is that I think she has a very commanding presence. She's always in positions of authority in her roles. I feel she's always a leader. She's always someone who has people under her. And I think that's what brought her to the Jerry Taylor and Rick Berman's attention. but I just don't think she had the chops for it. But the thing is, what I would have liked to have seen her, I would have loved to have seen her as an admiral on Star Trek, a guest admiral.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, you nailed that, because I totally see her in her own custom-made admiral's uniform being sort of maybe a really good friend of Admiral Nechayev.
Yes,
maybe,
yes, that
like,
is
those
exactly.
Those two get together for tea and they're just totally bitchy about with everything and everything. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That would have been fantastic. Now, I did not watch Buffy, so I really don't know too much about Lindsay Krause. You know, I looked at her IMDb profile. Looks-wise, yeah, she's fallen right in this range. And you say that she's had a lot of leadership positions. Okay. But if she's not convincing, that's the kicker for me. I can't get over that part.
Yeah.
If she doesn't command authority, then forget it.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Is like, that's just me. I'm sure there are people who are screaming in their cars right now, like, no, Lindsay Krause is a saint. You know what I'm saying?
And it's okay if you think that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, you can tell me I'm wrong. I mean, it's all just personal opinion, but I would have much rather seen her as a guest admiral than captain of the Voyager.
Yeah, I would have loved that, too. Here's another person where I'm on the fence now between whether she would have been a great captain or if she, too, would also be a really good admiral, and that is, of all people, Patty Duke. Did you know about this?
I didn't know about that until I read this article, but I don't know that much about Patty Duke.
You never watched the Patty Duke show?
No, I never watched the Patty Duke show. I did watch the Miracle Worker, so that's all that I know her from, is the Miracle Worker.
Oh,
that's
okay.
It.
Okay, I loved watching the Patty Duke show. That was one of my favorites as a kid, so I know her from that. I've seen her in some movies. She's a fantastic actress. She's a very well-regarded actress. She's probably a little bit on the older side as well, as far as the range of actresses go for the Janeway role. Could she have been the captain? Yeah, I really think so. But she would have made a better admiral.
Okay. All right, so it's kind of like Lindsay Krause then.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I see her in some weird jacket and the belt. Totally. Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's a little harder to envision her in the Starfleet uniform. Now, I'm sure she could have pulled it off, but I'm kind of glad that she didn't get it.
Okay, here's somebody that I think would not have been a good fit at all. Like someone who because there's tons of people on this list that I don't really know, but here's someone I know who is just like, nope, nope, no, nope, nope.
Who's that?
That's Kate Jackson.
Oh, really? I did not know. Okay.
Yes, from Charlie's Angels. One of the original Charlie's Angels.
All right, and how come that wouldn't have worked, Tristan?
I hate to have people pigeonholed in former roles. You know, like, I just you know, she played Charlie's Angels, and I'd hate for her to be typecast as someone who can only do that. But the thing is, that's all I know her from. That's all that I've seen her from and derivations thereof. So
I gotcha.
When I see that, I'm just like, I can't take you seriously.
It,
you know,
yeah,
like
you're
an angel.
Knowing UPN, had they hired her, they probably would have used Charlie's Angels as a gimmick. So in that respect, it's an absolutely wonderful thing that this did not happen. But on paper, she is Emmy and Golden Globe nominated.
Yes.
And she's also worked with Bob Picardo in the past. She did Loverboy. And I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I haven't seen that. So that's one of the things, is that I could be wrong, because all I've seen her in is Charlie's Angels. So,
but I'm kind of glad that this one did not happen too. Just
Rubs me the wrong way. Another thing that I'm kind of unsure about, and I'm okay, it's in all the articles that I read, it just says that this person was considered for the role. In this business, that could mean anything. What that could mean is that Michael Piller, Jerry Taylor, and Rick Berman were all sitting in a room and we're like, who would be good? Do you know what would be really good? Is if we could get Linda Hamilton. They're like, oh yeah, that'd be interesting. But then that's as far as it goes.
Maybe. You're right.
Yeah, that could possibly be as far as it goes. So like on this list, it says Linda Hamilton was considered for the role. It doesn't say she auditioned. Doesn't say that she talked to them about it. Just says that she was considered. So Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor, what do you think?
Yeah. Again, you could get really gimmicky with this, and it's absolutely nothing against her as an actress. Thing is, I think the difference is She could do it. What do you think?
I've never been that big of a fan of Linda Hamilton. I love her in genre stuff. I think she would have been fine, but I feel like it would have been distracting when we had badass Janeway moments.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Think about Macrocosm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, think about that episode and how unlike Janeway that was for what we perceive Janeway to be. Janeway was the scientist. She was the leader. You know, she led from the chair, but she also got her hands dirty a little bit. This mm-hmm. was badass Janeway. This was bam. I'm in the tank top. I got the gun. I'm gonna kill me some macrocosms with a knife. But the thing is, if we saw Linda Hamilton in that role, we'd be like, oh yeah, no, it's Sarah Connor. You know, she can kick butt.
It's true. And maybe we would go in with the expectation that that's the kind of Janeway we would see all the time.
Absolutely.
So that would have not necessarily been a good thing. I mean, Captain Kirk is known for the fist fights. Let's leave that to him.
Right. We've gotten that captain before. Let's
exactly.
You know, and you know, Janeway's more of the scientist. And even though Picard, you know, like he was the diplomat, though. He was the diplomat, the archaeologist, the thoughtful captain. Like, yes, he was a very intelligent individual and had science influences, but Janeway was the scientist out of all the captains.
Yes.
And yes. I think this is one of those things where the perception of the actor is important. The audience's perception of what they've done before. Now, I'm not saying Linda Hamilton couldn't have done it, but we would have been distracted.
Yeah, I agree. As an audience, I think it would have been a little hard to get on board. Certainly at first. Now, maybe over time we would have changed, but I think there would have been a learning curve there.
Now, let's switch gears just a little bit, and let's talk about how Janeway was not always a woman.
Yes, there were guys considered for this role as well.
And what happened was they were pitching a show, and they're like, okay, let's do this. Let's say it's off in the Delta Quadrant. It's different from Deep Space Nine. And they were just doing the same old, you know, like, okay, let's find a guy. And when they were doing that, the name that popped out on my list was Gary Graham, who played Saval in Enterprise.
And not only that, but we know him on Voyager because he played Tannis, the Ocampan who was the minion of Suspiria and told Kes to bring the fire.
What do you think of Gary Graham as an actor?
I'm really neither here nor there. I really haven't seen him outside of anything, probably, except for Star Trek. So that's a pretty limited palette there. I do find it interesting that he was also considered for the role of Benjamin Sisko, as well as Janeway. And they were considering, just so people know, maybe not everybody knows this, they were considering male captains, just in case the whole thing with a female captain would fall through entirely. Like, if they couldn't get in somebody else besides Genevieve Bujold, they almost chucked the whole thing and started over with a male captain. Almost.
Almost. Yeah, I remember reading about that, and they said, they're like, if we couldn't find the right woman, we'd have to cast a man, and they'd have to recast almost everybody else in the show, because everything was centered around a female captain, and so they're like, okay, well, we need better female supporting roles then.
Right, exactly. You've got to have that balance, right?
Right, so Chakotay could have been a woman.
Yeah, there was a lot of anxiety on set of, are we going to have a job tomorrow or aren't we? And thankfully, Kate Mulgrew came in and saved the day. Now, about Gary Graham here, what do you know about him? Do you know more than I do?
Do you remember the movie Alien Nation?
Yes.
He was in the TV show that was based off of that movie.
Okay. I never watched that, but okay.
He played Jimmy Kahn's part. And it was, I kind of liked the show. I mean, I was a kid. I'm sure, you know, it's different now, you know, if I watched it as an adult, but I really enjoyed it. But as I got older, I was never really convinced by Gary Graham's acting. I always thought he was a little out there and just not really on point or very passionate. And so when I saw him as Saval, I was like, yes, that is what he needs to do. He needs to be a Vulcan. I think he's a perfect Vulcan. Not a good Janeway, but maybe an okay Sisko.
Maybe. I have a hard time imagining it just because Avery Brooks is the Sisko.
He is the Sisko. That's the thing. I'd have to take Avery Brooks out of the equation.
Right, and that's really tough after all these years.
But I'm just trying to put Gary Graham on Deep Space Nine as a captain, essentially. You have to take Sisko out of it. But
yeah, it could have been interesting, but honestly, I don't know. He was fine as Tannis. and he got on Voyager eventually, so be it.
Well, we could go on and on, and I would like to mention one person, one last person, and only because they have a sci-fi connection. One last person for Janeway, and that's Tracy Scoggins.
Tracy Scoggins, Captain Lockley on Babylon 5?
That's correct. So she's been a sci-fi captain before. Isn't that a little incestuous?
Yeah, in a weird way, it kind of is, because, well, she became Captain Lockley well after she auditioned for Captain Catherine Janeway. I am not a huge fan of Tracy Scoggins. I hate to say it. This would not have gone well.
I never got the appeal of Tracy Scoggins. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, I'm glad that she found work, and I'm glad that she's, you know, I'm glad that she's so working, or she worked. And she was even in an episode of Deep Space Nine as a Cardassian, and she was fine in that episode. But I just, in general, when I watched her on Babylon 5, I was like, nope, no, nope, nope.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry. She did not have the chops to be the captain of the station on Babylon 5. I think she is the kind of actress who is a really good guest actor. Like, as a Cardassian, she was great. She was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I didn't really watch too much of Lois and Clark. She was also on that show, and I have no idea how good she was. I think the fact of the matter is that she's a good-looking lady. She's got a hot, smoking, athletic body. And so her looks, I think, have helped balance maybe a little bit in the talent department. I'm sorry, Tracy Scoggins, if you're listening to this. I don't love you, but I respect you for what you do, but you would have not been a good Captain Janeway. No.
Nope.
No siree, Bob.
Nope, not at all.
Mm-mm, no, no, no. Based on what I saw in Babylon 5, not interested.
We've talked a lot about Janeway, and we have one last person. But the reason why we saved her for last is because both Shar and I have a lot to say about her. An article was just released about her auditioning for Janeway. But the thing is, who else did she audition for before we give the name?
She auditioned for not just Janeway, but Seven of Nine, The Borg Queen, Tasha Yar, and Deanna Troi.
And that person is Susan Gibney, better known as Leah Brahms.
Right. She eventually did get on Star Trek. And if you want to read the article that we are referencing here, go to StarTrek.com, because they recently interviewed her.
It's very easy to find. StarTrek.com, bam, you'll find it. Susan Gibney. Okay, so she was also Erica Benteen in Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
In that great two-parter, Homefront and Paradise Lost. Could be some of the best two episodes in Deep Space Nine, and she was a big part of it, and she was a commander in that. Okay, so I'm getting all over the place. All right, so so we all know her as Leah Brahms. We know she can be warm, but she can also be intelligent. She can be sensual, but also commanding, and you don't want to piss her off. And Susan Gibney is just, I think she's such a talented actress, and I just wanted to see more of her, and I'm so sad that I didn't get to.
Yes, and we were even supposed to see more of her as Dr. Leah Brahms. She was supposed to come back for a third episode, and it didn't happen because she was pregnant, and therefore it wasn't going to work, and darn, we missed that chance. The interesting thing about her role on Deep Space Nine is it was, as she said in the interview, the consolation prize for not getting the role of Captain Janeway, because she was one of the few who was really down to the wire. After everything fell through with Genevieve Bujold, she was one of the few who was called in for another audition.
See, the thing is that, okay, I'm glad that Kate Mulgrew got it. I really am, because I love Janeway, and I love Catherine Janeway.
She's our captain.
But if something happened, say Kate Mulgrew didn't come in, say that they didn't like Kate Mulgrew and they didn't go with her and they had to go with somebody else, I would have hoped that it would have been Susan Gibney.
I think this would have worked.
I honestly think this would have been a good show. It would have been a very different show. It would have been a very different show. Because the thing is, she's much younger. Well, not that much younger. But she's younger than Janeway. But the thing is, she looks a lot younger, in my opinion.
She does.
They even said that when she auditioned, they tried to add some aging makeup on her. So that she looked older.
Okay, wait. That's a cardinal sin in Hollywood, isn't it? Unless you're supposed to do some really horrific, really, really old age scene, right? I mean,
she had this beautiful baby face, even at that age, that just didn't make it seem like she should be a captain. But here's my opinion, and here's why I would have liked to have seen her. do this. When you look at Kate Mulgrew, she has this presence that makes you go, yeah, yeah, I want to follow you. You are a leader. And I think Susan Gibney has the acting chops to pull it off. I think she has this great quality that makes you intrigued and you want to listen to her and you know that she knows what she's talking about, but she has that young look. And when she was a commander in Deep Space Nine, she was obviously old enough to be a commander. So, you know, a couple of years goes by, maybe she could be a captain. And so I would have loved to have seen her struggle with the crew where does this woman really know what she's talking about? This person who looks like she's fresh out of the academy. Does she have the experience?
And she's got half a crew of Maquis people who are really not sure about her in the first place. This could have been, say, Janeway's very first command. And yeah, so absolutely. She hasn't been really tested quite yet. This was her first mission. And then all of a sudden, she's by herself in this very hot mess. Oh, that could have been a very interesting Star Trek Voyager.
That's the direction that I think it would have been interesting to take, where she earned her command. She went through it very fast, and some people were questioning that decision. Where, yes, she's qualified, but does she have the experience? Does she have the years under her belt? And she clearly doesn't. So she has to battle that within herself. Like, she's doubting herself, and then the crew's doubting her. But the thing is, by the end of Caretaker, we're like, okay, this person clearly knows what they're doing.
Yeah. She's large and in charge, and you're going to follow her.
Yeah, absolutely.
That could have been very interesting. Yeah. I definitely could have seen her in the role as Janeway, but as a very different Janeway. I do think they would have written her very differently, but Susan Gibney is a very talented actress. She's had a very good career, despite not getting so many roles on Star Trek. She came so close so many times.
I know. But that's a lot of auditions within one franchise.
Oh, it's so much rejection, but that is acting. You know, and I guess in the interview, she said kind of as a joke, you know, oh, see you next time, you know, almost like knowing, okay, well, I didn't get this one, but maybe next time. And they did get her in a couple of times.
I feel like we can use Susan Gibney as a jumping point, because she also auditioned, as you said, for Seven and the Borg Queen. Somebody else who auditioned for Seven and somebody else from Babylon 5, like Tracy Scoggins, is Claudia Christian.
Now, this is so interesting. Is it not?
This is an interesting choice.
It really is. Okay. You and I have obviously watched some Babylon 5. So we know her as Commander Susan Ivanova, essentially the first officer on the Babylon 5 station. And she does a fantastic job in that role. She definitely fits that role. But what do you think about the prospect of her being a separated Borg?
Okay. I can't picture her as Seven. I can't picture her as Seven at all. Mainly because Jerry Ryan is just so great at it. It's just Jerry Ryan is Seven. There's no other Seven than Jerry Ryan. But the thing is, Claudia Christian is just so commanding. I could have seen her as a Janeway before I saw her as Seven.
Thank you. Okay, instead of Tracy Scoggins auditioning for Janeway, I could have seen Claudia Christian getting pretty far with it.
I could see her getting pretty far, but it's that same thing as Susan Gibney. She's got a young face. She's very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably a little too young, and so that would be a conversation raised. Now, obviously, she was a commander on Babylon 5, so it might be a little incestuous, like Scoggins, you know?
Right, and she already had the role as Susan Ivanova when they were doing auditions for Voyager, so that would have been really controversial.
Actually, do you know what? Do you know what? I got one better.
What?
Better than Janeway, better than Seven. She would have made a fantastic B'Elanna.
Ooh, yeah.
Think about that. It just makes you tingle.
Yeah, I oh, man. Yeah, I've got this warmth in my belly right now. Oh, man, that would have been so awesome. She should have, never mind the fact that she didn't make B'Elanna, because I love Roxanne Dawson. They should have just had her be a Klingon on any show.
Yeah, absolutely. Any show, any franchise.
They still should.
Claudia Christian as a Klingon.
It's
not
too late.
JJ, we all know that the third Star Trek is probably going to be about a Klingon war. So bring Claudia Christian in as some sort of, as the Klingon commander. Do that.
Hell yeah. Oh, Tristan, you're a genius. Why are you not working in Hollywood, my friend?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'd work in Hollywood if I could commute back and forth between Chicago. But
That's not a here and over there.
That's a lot of travel.
Yeah.
So I like her. I like her a lot. I liked her on Babylon 5. She was one of the few things that I actually liked about Babylon 5.
Yes, yes. It's really hard to imagine her, though, as Seven of Nine. And the reason why is not that she's a bad actress, but Claudia Christian just has way too much spunk to play such a straight role, in my opinion. I think she would have gotten bored.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Jeri Ryan can do the bland with a little bit of smolder, and Christian's just a little bit, she'll fly off the handle.
Yeah, she needs to do that. Because, yeah. I mean, play to your strengths. She's fantastic as Susan Avando when she kind of blows up and is in a fit of outrage, you know, Garibaldi, you're a dead man! That kind of a thing. I love that. It's really hard to imagine her having any kind of fun in the role of Seven. It's just not for her.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. But one person who did audition for the role of Seven, who I think would have been interesting to see, I think they made the right choice with going with Jeri Ryan. So I know you don't know of her because you're not a big Xena fan like I am, but that's Hudson Like. Hudson Like played Callisto on Xena Warrior Princess. And Callisto was this crazy, crazy villain with a lot of powers, and she could create fireballs, and she was a good, you know, a sword fighter, and she was insane. She was literally insane, and she had this wicked scream that rivaled Xena's, and she's an attractive blonde, and she's a lot like Jeri Ryan in that aspect. And like she looks a lot like Jeri Ryan, in my opinion, just like the same height, the same build, blonde, and, you know, has good acting chops, can do the crazy, but can also do the subdued. And I think she would have been okay. Like, if Jeri Ryan didn't exist, I think, okay, yeah, no, I could see Hudson Like, but at the same time, she comes from she's been in so many sci-fi shows and so many C-rated sci-fi shows, you know, like something that you watch at 3 a.m.
yeah.
I hate to do this to her, but she probably would have brought that with her, that baggage to the show, where people are like, oh, okay, it's on UPN, maybe it's gonna be like one of those shows, you know.
Yeah, it is unfortunate, but her screen credits do kind of give off that vibe. Now, I just looked her up on IMDb, and she's blonde, she's beautiful. Looks-wise, she could have definitely pulled it off as Seven. And acting-wise, I'm sure she was fantastic. But, yeah, again, reputation. You know, that means a lot in Hollywood, because
perception,
it can cause a lot of problems. You have to consider every little thing. So it makes sense that she didn't get it, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think she's great. I think she would have been a fine choice, but our perception of her is probably what helped her not get it. All right, so to end on a note, and since we did a lot of Janeway, a little bit of Seven, let's end on Kes. And that person who auditioned for Kes, but didn't get it, obviously, is Jennifer Gotti.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, for those of you who recognize the name, but you're like, who is that? She played Libby.
What? Okay, wait a minute. Libby?
Yeah, she played Libby on Star Trek Voyager. That's where we know her from. Harry Kim's fiance, or whatever she was to him.
Okay.
She was also in Next Generation, and she played Bael. I think that's how you pronounce it. I can't remember. She was a half Klingon, half Romulan when Worf was looking for his dad. And he found a refuge of Klingons under captive.
Huh. Okay, this is one where I really have a hard time imagining her as Kes. I can't imagine her in the blonde wig.
It's
not working for me at all. I really liked her as a half Klingon, though. She rocked that.
She rocked a half Klingon. I think she was fine as Libby, but I feel like anybody could have played Libby.
Yeah.
There wasn't much meat to that bone, but I feel like, I don't think they would have gone with the blonde wig with Libby. I think they would have gone in a different direction for her, because she has very dark eyes, the dark eyebrows, you know, so like the blonde wig,
eyebrows. Yeah.
I could see her looking, if they wanted to keep the pixie look, I could see her looking more like T'Pol than Kes.
Yeah.
As we know her.
I think they
her.
Would have to go that route, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though, oddly enough, Jolene Blaylock is a blonde.
Yeah, right. Some weird contradiction there, but yeah,
but
I agree.
It makes sense in my head.
Yeah. Oh, that is so interesting. This is one I had no idea. I did not find this in my research at all. Oh, wow. Okay.
So, I mean, I don't think we need to talk about it for a long time, but I feel like I could see her as Kes, maybe. I haven't seen that much of her. I think she did an okay job in what we saw her in Star Trek.
Yeah,
I think she could have done it. Would have been fine. But
yeah, but eh.
Yeah, who knows?
Okay. All right. Well, we've got one more thing to talk about, and then we've really got to wrap this one up because we could take this on till dawn. We have so much ground we could cover, so we're obviously going to continue this some point in the future. But what is the last thing we're going to mention today?
The last thing we're going to mention, we're not going to talk long about it because we'll talk about it later, is Bob Picardo. Robert Picardo, we know him as the lovable doctor with the best bedside manner ever, originally auditioned for Neelix.
Yeah, imagine this, people. The doctor as Neelix.
I can. I really
can. Oh, me too.
I can see him as Neelix. I absolutely can. Now, I can't see Ethan Phillips as the doctor, but I can see Bob Picardo as Neelix. I think he could do it.
Yeah, I could definitely see Bob Picardo being that as they wanted him to be, that breakout character as Neelix. And I kind of wonder, honestly, if they would have cast Bob Picardo, if Neelix would have become like the fan favorite of the show. Do you think that would have happened, or am I pulling at straws here?
No. I don't think you're pulling at straws. I think they definitely would have approached it differently. We would not have seen the same Neelix as we do today. It might not have been as crazy. Picardo might have grounded him a little bit more. Maybe. I mean, I'm just conjecturing. Like, would he still have been one of the big three? You know, the Janeway, right. The Seven, and the Doctor?
Yeah, would it have been Neelix instead?
I don't know. I feel like without him being a hologram, it wouldn't have had that Data syndrome, you know, where Data's an interesting character because of his situation, because right. He's artificial and he's struggling with his identity and his humanity. And we attach to that. And so that's why we want to see a Data episode, because it's fantastic. That's why we want to see a Doctor episode, because this is a fantastic theme. That's why Seven is such a fantastic character, because she's tackling right. with her humanity. And Neelix isn't a human, and so he doesn't have to tackle with that.
No, but he did have his own demons. I mean, Picardo is a very capable actor. He would have rocked any role that he would have gotten. Now, I do think that they made the right choice of making him the Doctor and putting Ethan Phillips in as Neelix. I feel like that worked out for the best. But I could definitely see him putting on the Talaxian spots had, say, Ethan Phillips never auditioned for Neelix. Bob Picardo definitely could have stepped in and gotten that role.
Every single time I think about this, I just think about him stepping off the transporter pad, meeting Tuvok, going, "Neelix, good to meet you."
That's an interesting visual, isn't it?
Just seriously, everybody at home, close your eyes if you're not driving, and think about Picardo saying those lines in that huge coat.
Okay, Photoshop artists, I really want you to get on this. Put the Doctor's face onto Neelix in that scene. Please, pretty please, we'll give you a shout out on the show. We'll give you our undying love, eternal love. And what better? What more do you want? All right, so all these wonderful would have beens and might have beens are not the only thing that we are talking about on Trek FM this week. So here is a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Where no man has gone before, comic versus episode.
They talk about how we just picked up this psychiatrist from Alderaan.
Alderaan. Let's just call it Alderaan.
Earl Grey.
All good things.
In a universe where Troy is dead, the Enterprise D lives on. That's all I want to say. It's the only thing that matters.
The Ready Room.
Simple defense.
Ducat recorded messages, obviously, for a lot of different scenarios. Isn't it funny to think of him, like, you know, whatever, 10 years before this episode, like, you know, putting a day aside. It's like, I have to sit in front of a camera and just think of ways they could screw us.
The Orb.
Till death do us part.
His are very quizzical in nature. They're of the scientist. They're of the somebody who is willing to accept, okay, what is this reality? What's going on? She's just all like, tell me what to do right now. You know, like, there's nothing spiritual about her.
To the journey!
Voyager Season 4 Marathon.
I was working full-time on top of being a full-time student, and I...
Listen, I don't want to hear your excuses, okay? I don't want to hear them.
Like, life was happening and...
A great man once told me, if something's important to you, you make the time. Warp 5.
Organians on Enterprise.
part of what this episode of Enterprise is about for me is it's the search for the Organian society to find compassion again.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Griff Bull and the X-Files, Bad Blood.
It's actually kind of odd because the audience can piece together the narrative flow better than, you know, their boss.
That's because their boss didn't have the brilliant direction of Cliff Bull to observe.
Literary Treks.
Greg Cox, No Time Like the Past.
The one thing I had to be very careful of, and this was another sort of potential minefield that I had to navigate, was nobody in Kirk's time knows who the Borg are. So she can't, like, oh, hi, I'm 7 of 9. I'm a former Borg. You know, they don't know the Borg. She has to be careful not to tell them the Borg.
And introducing Continuing Mission, our newest show all about fan series and independent productions.
Star Trek continues with Doug Drexler.
Everybody who does a Star Trek show in CG, the first thing they do is make the ship 947 feet long. Well, there's no way it's going to look the same, because the ship that they shot on television wasn't 2,000 feet long. It was 11 feet long.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week, people. That is a lot of new content. We thank you for listening, and we would not be able to do this without the help of a sponsor. So let's hear for a short moment about that.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
So, it is time to sing praises for a listener who has given us an iTunes review, a 5-star iTunes review, no less, and gave us a little bit of praise. Dirty Water Doggy, I love the username, wishes the episodes would sometimes be a little longer, but you know what? We do that on purpose. We try to keep you wanting more. We are glad that we help you with your daily commute, Dirty Water Doggy, and I hope you keep on listening, because we like to keep on trekking. Now, next week, what are we doing?
I am really excited about this episode, and I know I say that every week.
We always do, but we are. We do.
We genuinely are really excited every single week, because we love what we're talking about. We love Voyager. We love Star Trek. And I love the episode Favorite Son. Probably not in the way that you think, I mean. But I love watching Favorite Son, because there's so many corny moments in it, and so many weird moments, and just so many obvious double entendres that it needs to be commented on. And that is exactly what we're doing, because we're doing our own DVD commentary of Favorite Son.
Yes. Oh, this is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait for this, buddy.
But you're going to have to, and so are the listeners. And until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!